Well, gosh, teacher, I'm sorry. My dog ate my research, and that's why this is stranger still. Welcome to Stranger Still, the podcast where I get lazy when I do an episode all by myself. So last week, well, the week before last, John was in a car accident. He's okay, but he did have a little bit of contra-coup or concussiveness, and he's seeking medical help, but it also means that I'm flying solo, and normally I think Shelby would fill in, my wife Shelby, but she took our daughter to dance class. So that leaves you and me in what I thought was going to be an easy episode. I was like, you know what, I'll take it easy. It was just Thanksgiving weekend, been really busy. I'll laze out on a topic. And then it ended up being like probably more effort than it would have been if I just did my job and found a normal topic to cover. But this episode isn't your thing, I understand. But it's just going to be you and me. So strap in this week. Here's kind of my thought process is that a long time ago, like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, I was listening to Stuff You Should Know. It's a great podcast, friend of the show. And they had mentioned a website called Snopes. And I was like, huh, what's that? So I went home. I was driving when I listened to it. So when I got home, I looked it up and I spent hours on their website. Just like their website was a lot different back then. It was a lot better than it is now. And you could just like pull up a list of claims or myths or I don't know what else you want to call them. Basically legends. And you could just like spend hours going through these articles, and they had done extensive research on everything from, geez, I don't know, was Walt Disney frozen? Things that we've covered to, are tennis balls bad for dogs? Stuff like that. And if you haven't been there, it's such a fascinating website, and I kind of wanted to share my love, because that's kind of where this show came from. My skeptical and critical eye was born out of hours spent on Snopes.com, and I wanted to share a little bit. So what I did was I combed through their website. Their, like I said, their website isn't as good as it used to be. So you have to, if you want to try to find something, they have everything listed, all the articles on pages of like 12. So I combed through, I think, 2,000 articles to bring you 10 that I thought would be fun to share with you guys today. And kind of what Snopes does is they're a fact-checking website. They've been around since, boy, I thought these would have a copyright on them. I think like the 90s, the late 90s, 98 maybe. And they started just like debunking urban myths. Like now I can't even think of any urban myths. Like, you know that story about the it's like that old internet story about the girl who is scared in the middle of the night, so her dog licks her hand, and then she wakes up again in the middle of the night and her dog licks her hand, and she goes in the bathroom and like her dog is dead in the shower, so it was like a guy or something. And it says like, humans can lick too on the mirror and dog blood or something. They would just like go around debunking that stuff and be like, yeah, that never happened. There's no news articles about it or anything like that. And they're kind of under a lot of heat lately for a couple reasons. They are in the middle of like a 2 or 3 year long legal battle, which the Daily Mail wrote a horrible article about. It was like the founder is in this legal battle because he was embezzling money to pay for prostitutes and all kinds of lavish expenses, and his wife divorced him because of this, and she sold her shares in the company, and the GoFundMe doesn't tell you what it's for, and blah blah blah. And I was like, oh my god, is this some sort of conspiracy? I've been supporting this website for a long time. But turns out facts are more powerful than an agenda, and the GoFundMe tells you exactly what it's for, exactly what they're being held up in court for. And basically they're fighting the company that they had written a contract with to handle their ad revenue on their site and host their website. They like terminated the contract, and the company never relinquished their website to them, so like they can't make any changes to their website. They can publish articles and they can ask for help in this legal battle until they get control of their website back. But the other thing that came up is a lot of people are trying to tear Snopes down as a left-leaning agenda-pushing website, when in reality it's just fact-checking, which unfortunately there are concerns conservatives and liberals out there that make absurd claims, and it's their job to tell you whether or not these are factual. And a lot of conservatives don't like this because then their lies are exposed. But if you go, there's time and time again, there's websites out there like factcheck.org, a bunch of other ones that don't come to the top of my mind that say time and time again, they are in the middle of the political spectrum. They've been covering politics lately because they've covered all the urban legends and stuff and all the scams. And that doesn't sit well with people who believe in alternative facts, because facts, they are facts. And unfortunately, that doesn't sit well with people that try to tell you that Obama wasn't born in the United States and stuff like that. So if you see any hate for Snopes, usually it's because they upset people who prefer alternative facts, when in reality, they go after both sides. They if you're curious, you can just go to their website, and there's a whole section where you can find articles listed by true or false, or mostly true, mostly false, mixture, that sort of thing. And you'll see on those articles, there are claims from all sides of the political spectrum. All they're interested in is doing the research and telling you whether the claim is true or false. And you'll see people say, oh, here's another Snopes one, they got it wrong. And maybe they got one aspect of it wrong. But by and large, they do like a lot of research. They give all of their sources. They've been doing it for a really long time. They got people from all walks of life doing this research. The other thing that they're kind of under hot water for now is Facebook had like this panel of people that was going to do fact check. But then they brought on a bunch of legitimately conservative leaning fact checkers, and they stepped down. They stepped away from the program because the program sucked. So, Snopes, they're in a lot of trouble right now, and I just want to tell you guys why I love them, because they not only do they tell you if I don't know. What's if the Lion King has a frame where the word sex is spelled out, but it also tells you things like, does vaping cause popcorn lung? Which brings us to our first Snopes topic this week, which is, does vaping cause popcorn lung? And here's what I want to do with you guys at home. We're going to play a game, which is kind of weird because normally I have someone here to play this game with me. But before I tell you what the Snopes consensus was on this, I want you to make the decision in your mind if it is true, false, or somewhere in between. And if you get 6 out of 10 right, I have to send you a personalized thank you, like audio message. And if you get less than 6 right, you have to leave us a review on your podcasting listening app. See what I did there? So we'll walk through these, and hopefully you'll find something interesting in here. I know I sure did. Such as, does vaping cause popcorn lung? Now think about it really hard. Do you think this is true or false or somewhere in between? That's right. It's somewhere in between. So this came around in 2016, this thing called popcorn lung, or bronchiolitis obliterans. That's the best I can do, my friend. And it's usually accompanied with an image of a man on like a GoFundMe page who's like in a neck brace and hooked up to all sort of medical equipment and stuff. But according to Snopes, if you do a reverse image search, you'll find out that that was the victim of an e-cigarette explosion, not from popcorn lung. So popcorn lung gets this colloquial term thanks to a paper published by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, where they had looked at a microwave popcorn factory and found 8 cases of this so-called popcorn lung, or bronchiolitis obliterans. And they found that some of the chemicals, specifically one called diacetyl, was one of the flavoring agents or chemicals in the popcorn, and it had led to 8 cases of popcorn lung, which basically just like causes inflammation of the throat, causes breathing problems and shortness of breath. But that was out of almost 600 workers. So it wasn't a huge case, but it was, depending on like what part of the factory they worked on, it was kind of a big deal. But they found out, and this is kind of a weird scale to put this on, but the rate of illness was 28 to 70 cases per 1,000 person years. So between, like if you had three people that were 50 years old. That's 150 person years. So out of 10,000 person years, there were 28 to 70 cases, which is, it's small, but it kind of created this sensationalized popcorn lung. So when e-cigarettes came along, they were using diacetyl as a flavoring agent in a lot of these flavors. So in December of 2015, AOL published an article, which 4 years ago, I didn't realize AOL is AOL. Hang on, I gotta Google this. If AOL stale thing, I think they got bought by Google, but I would just imagine they got shut down. AOL, let's see. Hey, they're still around. Good for you, my friends. Yeah, they're basically just a news site now. Wow, they really screwed up, didn't they? They had a real shot at being like a monopoly of the internet, and they screwed up. So anyway, they had an article of a Harvard study that had tested 51 out of 7,000 available e-cigarette flavors or the liquids that go in them. Can you tell I'm a dad yet? And they found that they contained anywhere between 0 and 239 milligrams of diacetyl, which, to put that in perspective, one cigarette on average, according to a study in Japan, found that the average cigarette contains 336 micrograms per cigarette. So this Harvard study was only 51 cases or only 51 flavors. And on average, on another study, they found that an e-cigarette cartridge contains 9 micrograms per e-cigarette cartridge. So one cigarette is 336 micrograms. So if you use one cartridge an entire day, you're still a fraction of a hundredth of the amount in a cigarette. What that basically boils down to is if you're smoking, you're also at risk for popcorn lung, and no one is making a fluff about that because there's much more harmful things in cigarettes. But basically the conclusion is we don't know. This is kind of a mixed bag. Basically all of the Harvard study said is that we need to look into this more. If we're worried about diacetyl causing popcorn lung in a popcorn factory, maybe we should look into it with e-cigarettes. But it didn't make any definitive claims, and I think that's the important thing to take away here. You can see these images all over the place, but just know there's not enough science on this. So that's the conclusion. How'd you fare? 1-for-1, 0-for-1. Off to a great start, huh? How about this next one, which I think is a fascinating topic, just only because I've wondered for a very long time, which is, do menstrual cycles synchronize when women live together or work together, I guess. I've heard that a lot. So the science on this one states it's unproven. We don't really know for a number of reasons. The earliest claim of this came from a survey published in the Nature magazine in 1971, where they said, they surveyed a group of roommates and close friends for 8 menstrual cycles, and they said there is a significant increase in synchronization, that is, a decrease in the difference between onset dates among roommates, among closest friends, and amongst roommates and closest friends combined. Thanks for that clarification, Nature. The increase in synchrony for roommates did not differ significantly from the increase for closest friends. And everyone was like, wow, that's incredible. Like, totally sexist, but incredible. Then, come 2006, there was a study that tried to replicate the results that the original study found. And basically, this is what they said. They said, women within units, pairs or triples, did not synchronize their menstrual cycles. No statistically significant changes were found in any of the comparisons made, and the mean difference observed for all comparisons were close to the expected mean difference of 7.5 days. So a lot of the criticism on early studies, the Nature one, I don't think was the only one. I think there was one in 1992, was that they were going at it through a biased lens, and you were able to find a pattern based on a bias. So I think there were two other nails in the coffin other than the study that tried to replicate it. In 1997, they went down to a tribe of women in Mali, and they found no evidence of synchrony, whatever you want to call it. And they chose this because if there was an evolutionary reason for women to synchronize cycles, like if pheromones are being sent off to sync these up, this would be like the best group. There's no other outside influence, and they weren't able to find any connection. And the last nail in the coffin was there's this app out there called Clue, and in 2017 they partnered with an anthropologist Alex Alvergen, and they sampled data from the app, and based on the users, they found 360 pairs of people that had cycles over a similar time, and they tried to figure out if there were roommates, friends, coworkers, that sort of thing. And they found that 273 pairs had a larger difference in cycle start dates at the end of the study than at the beginning of the study. So they moved farther apart in their synchronized menstrual cycles. Only 79 of the pairs behaved the opposite way, with them moving closer together and starting to overlap more. So that wasn't a peer-reviewed article by any means. Wasn't blinded. I mean, I don't know how you would blind this. I guess you could, that's a good question. Either way, it wasn't peer reviewed and it's inconclusive, but I think that kind of speaks volumes. If out of a sample size of almost 400, a vast majority, 75% of them move the opposite direction, I think that gives us our answer. You know what the hardest thing about doing these episodes by myself is? Is that I usually use John as a moment to breathe. And like when I do these by myself, I forget to breathe. I just talk and talk and talk and talk. And speaking of mental issues, do Winnie the Pooh characters represent different mental disorders? How do you feel about this? I think everyone's kind of heard some variant of this. The Snopes article points out that there's the rumor that the Gilligan's Island characters personify the seven deadly sins, or that the Scooby-Doo characters are each based on one of the five Eastern colleges. And I've heard this a lot with various other cartoons like SpongeBob and whatnot. But this claim came from a tweet from at Tico Dolan, if that matters, they said, "How old were you when you found out that each character in Winnie the Pooh represents a different mental disorder? Pooh, impulsivity; Piglet, anxiety; Roo, autism; Tigger, ADHD; Eeyore, depression; Rabbit, OCD; Kanga, social anxiety; and Owl, dyslexia." I don't remember Owl that much, but I think dyslexia is a stretch. The rest of them do fit, but this originated from an article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal in the year 2000, where a psychological researcher, Sarah Shea, published this very in-depth paper on how each Winnie the Pooh character correlates to a mental disorder as a joke. The intention was to quote, "remind people that anyone can have disorders." And while these do match, incredibly so, the paper was actually very humorous. They went on to say they had a prediction about Rue that said, "We predict we will someday see a delinquent, jaded, adolescent Rue hanging out late at night at the top of the forest, the ground littered with broken bottles of extract of malt and the butts of smoked thistles. We think this will be Rue's reality, in part because of a second issue. Rue's closest friend is Tigger, who is not a good role model. Peer influences strongly affect outcome." So they try to be funny. Shea said that she intended to poke fun at her profession, not to like provide a fan theory. And A.A. Milne, the author of Winnie the Pooh, did have PTSD, which is explored in a biopic, the Goodbye Christopher Robin biopic. But she didn't know about that at the time. So it's not like she was trying to make a statement or convince people of this. She was just trying to be funny. And now people think that it's fact. Like A.A. Milne sat down and he was like, "All right, I need a character who's just going to eat a lot of honey, and he makes snap decisions, which often gets him in trouble. It'll just be a bear, sure, whatever. And then I need someone who's, I got a friend down the road, he's just worried all the time, and he started taking this medication, so I need a character who's anxious. I got the perfect one, it's a pig." There's... These theories are fun when you're young, but now I'm just like, come on. Don't we have other things to worry about than whether or not A.A. Milne was trying to make a statement on mental health? And even if he was, that's great. Good for him. Especially, 70, 80 years ago when these were written? Good for him. No one was talking about that. People still don't talk about it. Maybe we should start talking about it. Speaking of things we should talk about, how about, do energy drinks contain bull semen? Oh, did I say the last one was false? If that wasn't clear, the Winnie the Pooh characters are not based on mental disorders. But you know it is not false? A different prompt that is not, do energy drinks contain bull semen? Because that is not true. I thought this was hilarious because my father-in-law tried to push this claim on me. And he's like, "No, go ahead, Google it." And I pulled it up and I was like, "Well, it says right here that it's not." So this basically comes down to Red Bull. He told me that Red Bull contains bull semen. And I was like, that seems highly unlikely. And Snopes is... idea of where this came from is that taurine, taur, is Greek and Latin for bull, and in is, that means that something came from the other thing, so it came from the bull. So that's kind of true. Taurine was named because when they first discovered it, it came from ox bile. It wasn't even ox semen, it was from the intestines of ox. And it turns out taurine is inside of us and a lot of other animals in our intestines, in our large intestines. So it's a naturally occurring acid, but Red Bull, it turns out, makes it synthetically. This is on their FAQs on their website. Is taurine made from bull's testicles? Is taurine a derivative of bull's testicles or semen? And they said, the taurine in Red Bull energy drink is purely synthetic substance produced by pharmaceutical companies and is not derived from animals or animal material. All ingredients for Red Bull energy drinks are synthetically produced by pharmaceutical companies. This guarantees the highest quality. Because, I mean, imagine if you just got the wrong bull testicle one day, you have a really bad tasting Red Bull energy drink. So that one obviously is false. That's always fascinated me. People just, like, all of a sudden they're experts in Latin and they're like, well, I know Taurus is the constellation of the bull, so taurine must mean it comes from bull balls. So as I go through Snopes, and as you go through Snopes, hopefully by now you're a fan of it, you'll see there's a whole section in their archive for Disney urban legends and claims, like is it true that there are no deaths pronounced on Disney parks, or like I said before, is there a frame of the Lion King where dust spells out the word sex? But the one I chose for today is, did a topless woman appear in Disney's The Rescuers? Now, I had heard this. I asked my wife if she had heard this, and she said no. Maybe I heard it because I'm a boy and it features a topless woman, and I'm a boy. What does that mean? Anyway, this one is true, my friends. So Snopes says, on January 8th, 1999, Disney announced a recall of the home video version of their 1977 animated feature The Rescuers because it contained an objectionable background image. That image was one which appeared in a scene approximately 38 minutes into the film. If you're looking for it, just so you know, as rodent heroes Bianca and Bernard fly through the city in a sardine box strapped to the back of Orville, proprietor of Albatross Air Charter Service. The photographic image of a topless woman can be seen at the window of a building in the background in two different non-consecutive frames. First in the bottom left corner, then in the top center portion of the frame. Now, if you go to Snopes, they do feature a, I believe this is uncensored. I printed it on low quality, so I wouldn't waste ink. I think it's uncensored. That makes me sound like a creep. I'm not a creep. I printed all of these out. I did things a little bit different this week. So the thing that's kind of crazy is it's a photograph. It's not like an animated woman or anything. Like, it looks like just a Polaroid that they had cut out and placed over the frame. And apparently this has been present since the theatrical release. Disney says that it wasn't like a prank by any of their animators, but someone during the post-production added it in. And the funny thing is it had a Streisand effect. So if you don't know what the Streisand effect is, it's where Barbara Streisand wanted some image of her removed off the internet, and then it never went away. Same thing with Beyonce, that happened. Same thing has happened a million times with Donald J. Trump. And no one really knew about this because as you're watching it, it flashes by for 1/24th of a second, only twice in two different areas. So it's not even next to each other. So no one knew that they should pause it to look at this topless woman. So almost no one knew about it until Disney made this recall and they're like, yeah, there's a naked lady in our movie. And now everyone knows about it. So congratulations, Disney. I would assume that it is no longer there. So if it's on Disney Plus, let me know if it's in there. I'm curious. Just for purely scientific reasons, mind you, that's where my curiosity lies. Don't get any ideas about me. This next one I don't want to spend too much time on because it is a sorely dark subject, which is, was the world's youngest mother only 5 years old? Not a great look. And it gets even worse when I tell you that this is, in fact, true. There was a girl by the name of Lina Medina, a Peruvian girl, who gave birth to a boy on the 14th of May, 1939, very long time ago. He was 6 pounds and he was born through cesarean section. So they thought at first that her father was the father of this child, so he was arrested but then let go. They weren't able to find evidence, and unfortunately they weren't able to ever find the father of this child, which is terrifying. I'm sure now with like DNA evidence and stuff that wouldn't be too hard to do, but this is the late 30s we're talking about. Horrifying, but I thought it was important to feature because I've heard that one a lot too. I don't know about you. The other one I've heard a lot, maybe more than any of these other ones, and it is so frustrating, is this child's name real? I'm just going to read you exactly what Snope says here. They quote an image that went around a lot in emails from your grandmother way back in the day. They'd probably get it from one of their like breakfast friends from the donut shop down the road, and then they'd print it off and be like, "You got to look at this." It's an item about a child supposedly named Ladasha began circulating on the internet in early October 2008. Now, what do you think about Ladasha? How about I just read you this? A school teacher friend sent this to me. This is a child's name, Ladasha, like L-E-A. How would you pronounce this child's name? Leah? No. Lee-uh? No. Leia? No. Lei? Guess again. Are you resorting to tongue clicks yet? That seems very insensitive. It's pronounced Ladasha. Oh yes, you read it right. The dash is not silent. This child attends a school in Livingston Parish, Louisiana. Her mother is irate because everyone is getting her name wrong. So, if you see something come across your desk like this, please remember to pronounce the dash. When the mother was asked about the pronunciation of the name, she said, "The dash don't be silent." Wow. People will fall for anything. So, Snopes had scoured the Social Security database, which they point out it's not the end all be all. It doesn't have all of the information in it because there is private information that can't be listed. But they were not able to find any documented case of anyone's name being Ladasha. Now, I do want to point out that this was in 2008. People are naming their children stuff like Apple all the time, so it's possible that because of this internet rumor, there is someone named Ladasha now, just because the way the world works. I did a little bit of extra research because it wasn't in this article. I'd always heard that, they listed M and then the at sign is Matt, or creative with an 8 spelled K-R-E, the number 8 T-I-V, as similarities to Ladasha. But the one that I had always heard was Absidy, spelled A-B-C-D-E. And I found one website that claims 328 people were named Absidy between 1990 and 2013, but they included no sources. The only source that they had was to a CNN article where an autistic girl was denied a seating with Santa Claus because of a service dog that was with her at the time. That's the only source for someone named Absidy that I was able to find, so take that with a grain of salt. The other thing that I've always heard, and I've heard this so recently, it was like 2 years ago at a Memorial Day party at my uncle's house, someone was like, he said that he was a doctor and he used to deliver babies or something. I'm probably telling this wrong, but he was like, "We used to not let people leave the hospital till they named their kids, and I've heard lots of crazy names like Arangelo and Yolangelo or Lamangelo." Again, no documented cases. There was a claim of twins named Arangelo and Lamangelo in Georgia, but that was unsubstantiated, and we are marking Arangelo and Lamangelo as pure urban legend. Sorry, friends. Sorry to... I don't know what I'm sorry for. I'm not sorry for anything. These are stupid claims. Here's one that takes a little bit of a turn, not really like a bad turn. It's just different than the rest of these, because there's a lot of rumors about George Washington, like the cherry tree, him not being able to tell a lie, but there's also the claims that he had wooden teeth. Now, what do you think? Do you think he had wooden teeth? Lock in your answers now. False. The answer is false. In fact, you can go see a genuine pair of George Washington's dentures at Mount Vernon. The ones on display have a placard that says that they are lead-based, fitted with cow and human teeth, elephant ivory, brass, and steel from 1775 to 1799. This was not his only pair of dentures, but they were always made out of mixtures of that. They were made out of ivory, lead, brass, gold, bones, either from human or animals. If they were from animals, they were from horses, donkeys, cows. And there were rumors that he had purchased some teeth from his slaves, which may or may not be true. They don't have proof on that one. So the reason people think that they're made out of wood is just because of the coloration. And there's two theories as to that. One is that they just got brown with age, because we talked about fluorosis and everything, how it discolors your teeth, makes them really brown. But the other thing is that George Washington loved a very dark wine, Madeira wine. Madeira? We're going to go with Madeira because I added an extra R in there. It was very, very dark, and over time stained his teeth. So that's one theory as to how they got this dark brownish color and they look wooden. But if you look at them, they don't look like wood. They would look a lot better than they do. In fact, the picture of his dentures kind of grossed me out. Like, they're all chipped and jaggedy and weird looking. So he also didn't have bad hygiene back in the day. He actually had really good hygiene. He just had a lot of dental problems. He said that he blamed it on when he was younger, he would crack open walnuts with his teeth. So he had a lot of teeth problems, but he practiced good dental hygiene. So it wasn't that like bad hygiene caused his teeth to get brown. It's just that he had a bad mouth. He had bad bacteria in his mouth. So there you go. What are we down to? Wow, this went a lot longer than I thought it would. Hopefully you guys are still listening. I flubbed my words a lot, but you're just going to have to deal with it. I got two more. Second to last one here is Harvard study confirms Tibetan monks can raise body temperature with their minds. I think we've all heard enough rumors about Tibetan monks, like they can stick metals to their body and all kinds of stuff. Now this one, what do you think? Just so happens that it's true. So in 1981, some Harvard researchers went and met with Tibetan monks that were practicing a yoga called Jitumo. There's a D and a dash and a Tumo, so hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. And they claimed to control their inner energy, and they were able to increase their finger and toe temperature by 8 degrees Celsius, which is not a small amount. That's like 20, 30 degrees Fahrenheit. No, it's not that much, is it? It's a lot. Now, the reason that they think they did this is that if you concentrate enough, there are portions of the brain that are responsible for these things that your body does automatically. And what they found these monks were doing was they were widening blood vessels to reduce blood pressure. That's something that your body does naturally. And by concentrating, they were able to control that. The other thing that they were doing was a practice called forceful breathing. They had forceful breath and gentle breath, and when they were practicing forceful breath, they were able to not only increase their finger and toe temperatures, but their core temperature, the entire temperature of their body, they were able to raise that, which I think is kind of incredible. Like, we can just think of the things that you could do if you just thought about it. Like, you could control your heart. I don't know. What else could you do? That's your job to figure it out. How we doing? 9 for 9. Got one left, and it's the most obvious one, which is, do we only use 10% of our brains? And I always, every time I hear this, I'm like, everyone knows that's not true. But then I still hear people making this claim, and we still have all these TV shows and movies coming out about people using more than 10% of their brains, and it's false. There's no basis in this. And one of the things I was most curious on this is, where the hell did this come from? And it seems obvious now that I've read it and I understand a little bit more, but the idea that we only use 10% of our brains mostly comes from psychics and paranormal propagators that want to give an explanation to why we're able to have psychic powers. Because if you only use 10% of your brain and you unlock a little bit more than that, you can tap into something supernatural. So since what, the 90s, there's been a lot of psychic purveyors, paranormal purveyors that have written books on this, like Michael Clark, Craig Carges, Caroline Miss, even Yuri Geller, who sued Pokemon over the Pokemon Kadabra because he had spoons. So now he no longer appears on trading cards. That's just a little bit of bonus information for you. All claimed that they were able to unlock that extra percentage of their brain. But there was a book published by Barry Bierstein in 1999. It was a book called Mind Myths, Exploring Everyday Mysteries of the Mind. And what they did was they looked at PET scans of and MRI scans of different patients, and found out that all of the brain is used, believe it or not. And the one thing that I took away from this article, they said just as people don't use all of their muscle groups at one time, they also don't use all of their brains at once. So saying we only use 10% of our brains is like saying that we only use 10% of our muscles. Because I'm just sitting here, I am moving my arms because for whatever reason, when I talk to you, I can't not move my arms. But I'm not using my legs, I'm not using my core, I'm not using my, well, I'm using my ears to listen to myself, but I'm not like, not flexing my feet or anything like that. So I'm only using 10% of my muscles. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Because at a different part in the day, I'll be walking up the stairs and I'll be using 50% of my muscles. I won't be using my neck or my, pectorals, but I'll be using my leg muscles and probably my arms to balance myself. So anytime you hear someone say we only use 10% of our brains, also remind them that there have been many brain surgeries where we've removed parts of the brains, or a bullet or a railroad spike has been driven through someone's head and they didn't act the same after that. You'd think that in some of these cases, if we had taken out part of that 90% of the brain that's not being used or stuck a railroad spike through that 90%, they would act the exact same. Sometimes these people die. Sometimes these people get angrier or they have behavioral changes. That's because we use 100% of our brains. It's not just localized to one area of the brain. So, don't be stupid, and just know we use more than 10% of our brains. Now, time to tally them up, my friends. I'll give you a second to do that. Actually, while you're tallying up your score and figuring out whether or not you have to leave us a review, I'm gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, my friend. It's so nice to have you here. Hopefully you've left us a review if you need to. Hey, while you're on the internet, searching for Snopes, searching for where to leave us a review, you should also check out patreon.com/flyingmachine. We are part of the Flying Machine Network, and if you want to kick a few bucks our way, it not only helps us out, it helps our friends out so we can keep making good shows and bringing you good content and get a little bit of something in return. So why not do that? So while you're figuring all that out, I've got a speed round for us that I want to go through. I've got 17 random ones that I had on the list but didn't make its way into the episode because the stories weren't nearly as good. But you can still play along at home whether or not these are true, false, or somewhere in between. I'm just going to run through these really fast since we've been going a lot longer than I expected to. First one I have here is, why did Kentucky Fried Chicken change their name to KFC? Did they eliminate the word chicken because they weren't actually selling chicken anymore? Did they want to remove the word fried? None of that's true. It's all false. Sorry. My assumption is, I haven't read this article because it wasn't part of this episode, but I would assume that they couldn't, actually it just says right here, I just scrolled down, it says that they couldn't trademark the word Kentucky because that is a state, so they abbreviated it to KFC. Did Disney demand the removal of cartoon murals from daycare center walls? I've heard this a lot, like, oh, they couldn't let the kid have Spider-Man on his tombstone or something like that. Turns out that one is a true. I've got a menagerie of Simpsons predictions that supposedly happened. Basically, it's just a bunch of, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different claims that the Simpsons had predicted something on their show that happened years later. The first one here is, did the Simpsons predict Trump would try to buy Greenland? Nope. Did the Simpsons predict that President Trump would touch a glowing orb? That's so specific, but it is also false. Did the Simpsons TV show predict the fire at Notre Dame? False. Did the Simpsons predict a Donald Trump presidency? False. Did the Simpsons predict a mass shooting at a Black Panther movie screening? False. Did the Simpsons predict President Trump's death? Well, he's not dead, so false. Did the Simpsons predict autocorrect? False. Did the Simpsons predict the censorship of Michelangelo's David? Kind of. This says mixture. It says a case of life imitating art imitating life. Did the Simpsons predict the smartwatch? Also false. I've also, so this is the next one. This isn't Simpsons anymore. There's always that claim that someone was promised a Toyota and then they were given a Toyota. So they filed a lawsuit. Or a woman was told that she won a Hummer and then she was given a toy rather than the actual Hummer vehicle and she sued them. Those are true. I always thought that those were just stupid rumors, but they are true. How about the one that I've referenced like 40 times in this episode, which is that there's a frame in The Lion King where dust particles are kicked up and spell the word sex. That one is false. This one, I just know that it was the special effects department trying to subtly put SFX in there in a frame somewhere. And I know that if it did spell sex, Disney would come out and say, yeah, sorry, we gotta recall Lion King now. How about Chubby Bunny Marshmallow Choking Deaths? I've heard this one a million times. Just so happens that it is true. Here's another one I referenced throughout the episode. Does no one ever die at Disney parks? That is false. There have been plenty of deaths recorded on a Disney park property. How about the body under the bed? There's a vacationing couple staying in a foul-smelling motel room discovered a body hidden under their bed. This was like the plot in one of the American Horror Story. Well, it wasn't the plot. It was a, no, what the hell was that? Well, there was a plot where someone was hidden in a mattress, and this turns out to be true. And then the last one I have here is pins and needles and Halloween candy. Where pins and needles and razor blades have they been found in trick-or-treating treaters' loot? Turns out this one's true, which is kind of scary. I always thought that was a rumor. Maybe I should be a little bit more careful about that stuff. But it was also like in 1982, so I think that's the last time it happened. Oh no, just kidding. There was one in the year 2000. Still a long time ago. Still be careful out there. Thanks for sticking with me. Hopefully John gets better soon, so you don't have to be stuck with me. In the meantime, go over to our Facebook page and vote on what you want to hear for the rest of this month. I got to get that figured out. So I want to hear your input going into the end of this month. Halloween. Christmas is on a Wednesday, so maybe we'll do a super special episode for that. Until then, I'm still Nick, and this is Stranger Still.
I give you the incredible flying machine.